Thank you for tuning in to another episode of an Open Water Swimmers podcast. You may or may not know that I am endeavouring on my own set of ultramarathon swims this year and next. Clearly, compared to some of my incredible guests over these seasons, these events are relatively piddly. But nonetheless, I'm booked to swim the 65 kilometres around Jersey in September of 2023, and then I have my own English Channel solo attempt in August of 2024. I'm raising money for a charity called Amaze, who help families who have children with disabilities. They're based in Sussex. So if you're enjoying this podcast, please do head to my Just Giving page, which you can find on the blurb of the pod, or also if you go to my Instagram handle, OWSwimPod, it's there for you to find. Please donate anything at all. All donations are welcome, no matter how big or small. You can think of it, if you like, as just buying me a coffee. If you want to hear more about my story and why I am raising money for Amaze, then check out Intrepid Water and fellow swim podcaster Shannon Keegan and her interview with me back in May of 2022. Thank you. Enjoy the show.
I'm Shannon Keegan, and you're listening to an Open Water Swimmers podcast.
Welcome to episode 2, season 3 of an Open Water Swimmers podcast with me, Will Ellis. Thank you to everyone who listened to last week's episode. As with all the episodes, they're all available for you to listen to again and again and again on your podcast platform. Please do remember to leave me a rating wherever you get your podcast from. It all helps. Today's episode is with a fellow podcaster, a coach, a marathon swimmer. She interviewed me in May last year, and I'm returning the favour, as it's awesome to hear her story, having listened to her interview many a marathon swimmer on her podcast, Marathon Swim Stories, which is a stalwart in my podcast library. I really love it. She has completed many a marathon swim, including a gruelling 22-hour lake swim. It's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Shannon Keegan. Shannon Keegan, I'm thrilled to, I guess, return the favour, or not even that, just thrilled to have you on the podcast. This kind of duality of you interviewing me for your podcast and now I'm interviewing you for my podcast. It's great. It's like a game of podcast tennis, but welcome to an Open Water Swimmers podcast.
I'm delighted to be here. Well, thank you so much for the invitation.
Not at all. I think many people who listen to my podcast, I know, listen to yours. It's that thing at the end of the year when everybody posts what they've been listening to, and yours is always right up there, and mine's sort of, you know, bit further down. So there's obviously a nice crossover. So I guess some of my listeners will be really intrigued to hear your story, because you've spent so long. I think you've done 158 episodes, something like that. I might have got that wrong. So they might be intrigued to hear your story, is my point. So, which is great. So thank you so much for taking the time out of your morning, I guess. So Shannon Keegan, why do you swim? Obviously, not everyone starts in the open water, so it might be, why did you take up swimming? Why do you continue to swim? And what is it about the water or the environment of the water that keeps you coming back for more?
That's such a great question. I was introduced to swimming before. I grew up in a little complex that had a pool that was no lifeguard, and so every summer instructors would come and teach the kids to be water, just to be able to get to the side. So I think I was 11 months old when somebody taught me how to get to the edge of the pool. But my love of swimming was developed much, much later. I started out doing summer clubs and then age group swimming. And then in high school, swam high school swimming and developed this interesting, probably what could be considered performance anxiety toward my junior senior year, where I literally couldn't breathe. So I would dive into the pool and I wouldn't be able to exhale. So I would be inhaling. And I remember specifically, it was definitely a problem on like the 200 IM, which was like one of my better events leading up to this, whatever time in my pubescent life that I was swimming. And I remember not being able to breathe. And I remember being really glad when I got the backstroke and then somehow fighting through breaststroke and freestyle, being able to finish. And my coach being like, what happened? And I was like, I couldn't breathe again. He's like, you got to do something about that. And then I quit swimming and I went to college and I decided to take up some land sports. And I learned how to play what's internationally known as football. In America, we call soccer. And various other things. I learned how to be a terrestrial being after pretty much being underwater for most of my first 17 years. But I was drawn back to the pool to play water polo. I just, I lifeguarded and things like that and I liked water polo because my head was out of the water and I didn't have to worry about this breathing problem that I had. And so I had a meandering course through water polo, ended up in Southern California. And I guess through soccer, I'd started running and doing 5Ks and a little bit longer runs. And so I was like, okay, well, I know I can swim because I've always swam, having kind of forgotten about this breathing thing. And then I knew I could run. So I was like, well, I may as well just, and I biked places just as a form of transportation. So like, surely I could do triathlon. And I remember very clearly signing up for, and I lived very near the ocean, mind you. And I did resume swimming to some degree with various master's practices here and there. And I never had this performance anxiety thing when there wasn't necessarily a clock present. It was just something that, or a pressure of a competition present. It was just something that, so I was swimming intermittently, but then this triathlon bug got me. And I remember specifically doing a triathlon in somewhere in Southern California and swimming through the waves, like past the surf break and being absolutely terrified because I had some pretty tremendous open water fears that I thought I could just overcome on the spot because that's the kind of person I am. And then not being able to breathe as I'm fighting with all these triathletes to get out to the first buoy. And I remember just having the conversation with myself of like, you know how to swim, you know how to swim, you swam your whole life. Like you can do this. And like forcing myself again to like this exhale so I can inhale again. And being really glad when the swim was over, fighting through it. I remember wanting to hold on to the kayak, but not just because the kind of person I am. I don't ask for help. I just fight through. Finishing the swim and being very glad to be on the bike and then run. And somehow I kind of decided triathlon wasn't really for me. Continued playing water polo. And ultimately ended up moving to far northern Vermont, a couple miles from the Canadian border, where there's lakes everywhere. And so I'd grown up out west, as I mentioned, not really having any open water swimming experience other than throwing myself into uncomfortable situations voluntarily. And I decided again, and this is my mid-30s now, and I decided to sign up for a 1 mile open water swim where there's no bike or run attached. I wanted to see what I could do in a 1 mile open water swim competition. And it was in arriving for that particular event, which started at like noon, and seeing these people come out of the water who'd signed up for a 10 mile swim. So they'd been swimming since like 5 a.m. while I was drinking my coffee and wondering what I should have for breakfast and stressing about how I was getting ready for my 1 mile swim. And I see these people who are finishing, they've been swimming for the last 5 or 6 hours and they're coming out of the water. And it wasn't like something that occurred to me before that people could swim for 10 miles. I'd heard of the English Channel. I wrote papers on it in elementary school and whatever, but it really hadn't occurred to me that this was like a thing, that it didn't have to be associated with a bike and a run, that you could just go and swim for a really long time. And so I did my 1 mile swim, but I had this aspiration to be doing something more. And I remember being a little bit afraid of the muck and the lake weed and the things that were in this 1 mile swim, but I just became pretty much possessed that I just needed to swim further.
Did you have any performance anxiety on that 1 mile swim?
I don't remember anything specifically. No. It did come back periodically, but I'm still working on this, mind you. This breathing thing that I have.
Is that like an internal pressure that your mind, I'm interested in this because obviously you've done some very, very long swims. So you would have, that's something, as you say, you're still working on, that you would have had to overcome. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if it's like these shorter swims, because for someone like you, a triathlon swim is relatively short, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it as simple as, you know, knowing that you've got longer to finish, so there's more of a chance to relax, breathe through it, rather than knowing you've got to go full aerobic, if you like, and just get there as fast as you can, you know?
I think that I guess knowing now that, like, acknowledging what it is, I think I buried it for a really long time, like just that it was something that made me quit swimming after high school, I buried it for a really long time. And it's probably been in the last year or two that I've been like, oh, this is a surmountable problem. Like, first of all, instinctively breathe. I've purposely signed up for some breathing courses with like Oxygen Advantage instructors and things, and realized even just the conscious act of like focusing on breathing makes me just a little bit nervous. But if I keep practicing, just like anything else, if you keep practicing, it's something you can get better at. Yeah. But there was definitely something about swimming further that took me away from other people, like the pack kind of pressure of a competition. And once I found solo marathon swimming, where it's just you in a boat, then I've never had a breathing problem at all, because it's just me and the water and it's nature. And then I started getting to where the pool and the ends of the pool and having to do flip turns, like that would freak me out if I let it. But it's one of those things, like, we have control over our thoughts if we allow ourselves to give ourselves that power. Yeah. So yeah, I could freak myself out getting in a pool, me like, I can't breathe, I keep having to do flip turns, or I can let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? It's the marathon swimmer adage of just, we talked about this in the podcast when you interviewed me, the elasticity of time. Mm. Allowing yourself to be calm and present and still, and all the things that I think many marathon swimmers will know lots about, far more than me and my relatively meager, marathon swimming experience compared to some of the people you've spoken to, certainly like Sarah Thomas, Mark Chapman, et cetera. So, I mean, whereas in the pool, when you're being asked to do a load of 25s, it's harder to get into that flow state, isn't it? So let's just chart back slightly. When you found marathon swimming, and you were able to surmount this breathing problem, and you were able to sort of find some stillness, what happened then for you on a sort of broader context?
I guess I found open water swimming specifically really enabled me to like soak up the world around me. I had the great fortune of working just as a volunteer with a local kids swim team, and bringing them out to the open water really would help me have to suck up my fears, because I didn't want to impart them on any of these lovely children who were also terrified of things. Yeah. So I was in explaining to them, you know, the reality of the beauty, you know, and I had fortunately had worked in the water quality department in the city of Albuquerque, and the wastewater department is in a wetland for wastewater treatment. So I was very aware of the benefit of, like, you know, reeds and the nitrogens that they absorb, you know, to clean the water, you know, and that we pull our groundwater from deep down in an aquifer. You know, it's like I understood like the natural world, and like, I was able to kind of talk to these children talk them out of their fears of the water, so that we could just keep swimming, because they'd stop and pick their head up and we'd have a little chat, and then we'd put our heads down and we'd swim a little bit more. And I'd say that probably more than anything else really helped me come to terms with some of my fears of open water. That said, I still prefer to get in the water with someone else. I'd prefer there's someone next to me.
Yeah. I'm like you.
Working on the ocean. Yeah. I've done a few ocean swims, but I have much more practice.
Yeah.
Exposure is such a big part of it. Like just going, and that's helped me a lot, is like having a place where I can go swim, and you go there and again, and you get used to, and you have a course. And I have been able to go swim by myself it's the only time I could do it, because my kids were at school, whatever. And I had this short window time. None of my friends could make it. And I made myself go do a 3-hour swim or something by myself. So I have done that, but it takes it quite a bit. It's really easy for me. That's something more important to do.
I agree. I'm totally with you, especially in the ocean. If I'm going for a swim, you know, it usually has to be with someone else, just from a just from a safety perspective. Mm-hmm. But, even the beach in Brighton, which I know quite well, you know, I'm loath to go in by myself on a 2 or 3 hour swim. So what was your first marathon swim then? If Shannon, who tends to, it sounds like you jump into everything feet first and just sort of see what happens. You know, you've got a real spirit of adventure about you. So where was your first marathon swim then? If you've come from the pool, you find the open water and your first sort of big swim after you've watched these people doing the 10 miler.
Yeah. So I watched them do the 10 mile. Then the next year, I signed up for the 3 mile at that same Kingdom Swim that Phil holds in Newport, Vermont. I did the 3 mile and then I did a 10K that later that year. I did the Bermuda Round the Sound Swim, which was a lovely 10K. And I remember being on the bus to the start and being all tied up in knots and my, like, just so nervous about it. And I had this lovely gentleman sitting next to me on the bus was like, "Oh, what are you swimming?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm doing the 10K. And like my training leading up to this 10K, I was doing 10Ks every single Saturday with my two swim partners in the pool. We had this lovely clock, like from the, I don't know, 80s that you could program it. And it would just go, his name is Hal, the clock. And we would program him to send us off every 100. And we'd set a pace for 100s or 200s. And we would do 10K every Saturday. So I knew I could do the distance. Like, that definitely wasn't the problem. And this lovely gentleman was just like, "You're going to be out there for like, you know, 2.5-3 hours. Like, you can't be nervous that whole time. Like, I'm just like, why don't you just relax a little bit?" And it was really nice to get someone else reflect that back to me. And I ended up completing the swim, despite I was a little bit afraid of the salt. A complete newbie, had no idea what I was getting into. I hadn't trained in salt water at all. And very fortunately, I walked down the boat ramp to go to the start and somebody with a big vat of Vaseline was like, "Do you need some Vaseline?" And I was like, "What's that for?" I had no idea about chafing or anything or salt tongue. I swam, probably had my mouth open the whole time. I couldn't taste anything for 3 weeks afterwards, I don't think. So loads of learning. But that was the year after my 1 mile open water swim, I did a 10K. And then in that next year, I did the 10 mile. So 2 years after my first mile, I did that 10 mile swim. But I did it in a wetsuit because I was really nervous about finishing. And my husband was like, "Well, do you want to finish or do you want to get pulled right?" But like, because I was worried about the temperature, even though at the time it was probably like 70. So what is that? 21 Celsius. I probably hadn't trained enough because I tend to throw myself in the things.
If you were doing 10Ks every weekend, you know, that's more than enough to pull you around.
Yeah. So anyway, did the 10 mile, and then that subsequent year I did the 10 mile without a wetsuit. And then I just kept going because I kept thinking, I think the first time I did the 10 mile, well, even with the wetsuit, I think I came out of it just like, what now? What next? What I could do more. What else is there? Internet searching, just like really still thinking that, you know, anything channel-y to between bodies of land and bodies of water it still sounds crazy. It's still on my list, but I've been sticking to the lakes.
Yeah. I mean, lakes are amazing. And you know, you've always got that sort of controlled environment, haven't you, in a lake to a certain extent. Obviously there's, you know, weather storms can come in. Don't get me wrong. There's big lakes and lakes can have big waves. I'm not suggesting that they don't for one second. But comparatively to the ocean or the sea, you know, a lake is an environment that can be more controlled, I suppose, in many ways. And I think the romance of some people in the open water in terms of ocean swimming is that lack of control and that idea that you sort of have to just let go, trust all the other, you know, all the other people that are in play at the time. Is that something you identify with, like lake swimming, which you suggest you've done more of? Is that because you know that there might be a more controlled environment, or is that do you share the romance of an ocean swim?
I think I do. I think that, I guess the other part of my story is that, so like, I guess 4 years into my open water swimming start and falling in love with marathon swimming and just pushing further and further distances, I decided to have kids. So I'm pregnant and swimming. And so for now, I'm at this point, my kids are now 6 and 8. So it's been like 12 years of open water swimming. And now it's more like, if I'm going to go do a swim, I want to be able to complete it or have a better chance of completing it. And I don't know that I could get to, I guess, you know, how far can I actually go away from my family? And then if there's if weather window doesn't, you know, it never opens up, is that going to really be okay with me to just have a family vacation? So I'm just at this new point of like, I love the idea of it, but I haven't been able to make the time, for lack of a better way of putting it. And so maybe it's not important enough to me. And that's something I war with internally. Like, how is it not important enough to me? Surely I want to embrace, but to your point though, there is this letting go, this control factor. And I realize that as a marathon swimmer and talking to marathon swimmers a lot, is like that we, for some people who are very type A, I feel like for them, like they need this release and they love the letting go, then like that they can't control things. And I'm sure there's some of that in me too, but I having had 2 kids, I don't feel like I'm in control very often at all. So there's a lot of, I'm like, okay. And that's my little pep talk for myself going into a swim, is like, I'm well-trained for this. I've been, had kids, I've been raising kids.
Yeah. But you can't control, you can't control that. Do you know what I mean? Like, marathon swimming is inherently quite a selfish sport, you know, and our husbands and wives and partners, et cetera, all, you know, have to put up with, you know, not just the hours of training, but the vast expense that comes with planning a swim 3 years in advance, that suddenly, you know, where's the money going? So, and you can't control, I don't think you can control that as much as people feel, especially when children are involved, because they obviously have to be your priority. I guess I'm saying, don't be hard on yourself for that. You know, you have nothing to prove in that regard, especially when people have children. So what are your earliest memories then of swimming in the open water? Is it that 1 mile swim, or is there an earlier memory of you know, beach days or something in your past that sort of helped you, you know, add to the wonder of a big expanse of water?
There definitely have amazing memories. In 2011, I was fortunate to be asked by Bill White to come do the inaugural In Search of Memphrey, which is the cross border swim from Newport, Vermont to Mega, Quebec, as a 25-mile swim. And he was holding it in 2011, it was very much about reopening the borders and the relationship with our Canadian neighbors. And he let me know. And this, I had just done a 10 mile, so I wasn't really nearly equipped for a 25 mile swim at this point. But he said there was this other individual who was wanted to be on a relay, and I was like, "Do you want to be on this relay?" And I was like, "Oh, that sounds fantastic." So we kicked off at midnight. It was still calm, beautiful evening. And then at midnight, the gun goes off and the swimmers start, and I'm starting on the boat, and my relay partner is starting in the water. And all of a sudden the wind starts blowing, and we have these 1 foot waves, and we're swimming into a headwind, even though it was supposed to be going the other way. And it was a bonkers night where I think there was 2 support boats for like 12 swimmers, and they were supposedly with a kayaker, but the wind was so strong, people's kayakers were blowing off, and and people were swimming. It was a crazy event but there was some, and so 2 hours in, I get to switch with my relay person and I get in the water, and it's calmed, I guess, to some degree, it's calmed down a little bit. So it must've been 2 in the morning. At least whatever chaos is going on in the boats, which I'm seeing, there's, like I said, 2 boats for like 12 people. I see the boats going back and forth, and my 2 hours is up, and the boat comes over, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to switch. And my relay partner's like, I'm too cold. I don't want to get back in. So I was like, okay, well, I wasn't ready to be done yet. So I'm like, okay, try to warm up. I'm just going to keep swimming. So I swam another hour or two, and eventually mind you, in my nature of not necessarily prepping for things, in the way that's conventional. I had not done any night swimming leading up to this. I had no idea like what I was in for at all. I just totally just was like, yeah, that sounds like a fun adventure. Sign me up. in retrospect, there was, which is a very attractive thing to me, maybe about marathon swimming in a lot of sense. But the calm and the beauty, I remember very clearly, like watching like the constellation Orion, you know, like as it rises up over the mountains and seeing it like as it's traversing across the sky, and then there's like first light, and seeing the sun start to come up, and just like in later swims, I kind of described it as like being able, feeling like you can feel the earth turn, and just like that you're such a part of all living things and everything. But that was a big, I think, like this is it for me. I need to keep doing this. I need to be able to be the one that gets to the other side. That particular swim, I think I ended up swimming until about like 7 or 8 in the morning. It was well light, but it was complete dead calm. One of the boats pulls up with most like 5 or 6 swimmers and 3, it's a way overloaded boat, like pulling kayaks. And they're like, are you okay, Shannon? Are you going to keep swimming? And I was like, yeah, I think I'm okay. I think I did have a kayaker with me. My husband was probably with me at the time. And I'm a little resentful probably to this day that he's like, his comment to me, I hate to say this out loud, his comment to me was like, well, you're not going to make it to the other side, because I hadn't trained for it, right? I was here for a relay, but I'd swam like 6 hours at this point since I'd started. But my relay partner's like, I can't get in. She's just, there was no way she could get back in. But I felt like him telling me that I wasn't going to make it, that I was like, oh, I'm not going to make it. And so I got out.
Oh, no.
I did, in retrospect, I'm like, okay, I did my part, but
still, 6 hours is a long time.
It is, yeah. But never tell anyone. The coach in me now is like, you never tell anyone you're not going to make it. Then they're like, oh, I can't make it. Because I think I might have been able to keep going.
I'm sure you would. Did your relay partner apologize for not getting back in?
She felt horrible.
after her 2 hour swim compared to your 6, I mean. Yeah.
It wasn't so much that. I don't think it was a tall task.
You see, I'm being, you're right.
There's a lot of emotions. There's a lot of things going on that day. It was an interesting
I'm being unfair. You're absolutely right. I'm backing you. Whereas actually you're right. When you going back to the picture you painted, it sounds like a pretty sensational night. And to be able to see the stars like that after quite a rough start must have been a real relief for you. Yeah. So what does open water swimming mean to you now today, Shannon, the coach, the host of a major swimming podcast? And how has it changed from those early days, I guess, from being on the swim team and leaving, through not being able to breathe properly and beating yourself up? You know, are you able to sort of chart that journey?
Very much with the swims I've had in the last few years, the place I'm at with being a mom, and yet this still being something that draws me in. It's such a journey of self-discovery every single swim, about finding out what I'm capable of and what I could do better and do and what could I do more of. This last year I swam 22 hours in Lake George in New York, and had the bright idea to not just swim across. I thought I'd try to come back to where I started, despite having a rough, not ideal, maybe training season. But I learned so much in that swim. I swam across, it's 32 miles, and then started back, did about a 10K back, and my body was kind of shutting down. I hadn't really fed properly. The suspicion is at the end of it all is that I was getting cold, even though the water was like 70, 75. It was very comfortable temperature water. But I was getting the shivers and couldn't get my stroke rate up. And so we decided to call the swim and just kind of suspected that I wasn't getting enough calories. I was taking too many complex carbohydrates, and that were, I was, my body's having to work to, you know, break down the carbohydrates versus just getting quick energy. So learned about that And then I guess I'm not sure that I'm answering your question, but the self-discovery and but so now going into this next year, I've been doing this breathing for swimmers course and focusing more on my own breathing and my swimming, investigating so much more of my own stroke. I've been working with the Swim Mastery group this last year, completely transformed my swimming to where I can swim without my shoulders hurting at all, which has been huge because I've got pretty bad arthritis in my shoulders. I can't wait to see where it goes. And this next year, I'm really looking to come back to that breathing thing that stopped me when I was 17. And 30 years later, no, 31, I'm 48 now, is I'm trying to readdress that. Like, what could I do? I've never thought of swimming as something that where as a race. I've always told myself they're just events. Just using that little word swap has helped me think of it more as a milestone. I even tell some of my clients when they start up, it's like, this is like getting married or having a kid. Like, this is something you'll always look back on. You'll have pride in this thing that you accomplished. And I want to do an event where I'm able to really, really push myself physically. Swimming's, you know, not hard for me. Having been a water polo player, it's easy to tread water and take a feed. So there's all of that is easy. And I proved to myself I can swim for 22 hours. But what could I do if I was actually trying to do quick feeds, like keep up a pace, like actually had a goal time? You know, it's so I feel like I'm coming back around. I haven't put that pressure on myself over the last 12 years. I looked at it as a way of kind of opening myself up to like, well, let's just see what you can do. And so now I'm kind of say, well, what could I do if I did it like at pace or at, you know, with it under some amount of pressure? I'm not sure I actually have the gumption to go into a 10K swim and around a buoy course, but maybe I need to put that on the list. Yeah. It's like a little pressure swim, right?
It strikes me as amazing that a lot of, we talked about the difference between ocean swimming and lake swimming, but when I speak to lake swimmers, you know, that the distances always seem insane in distances and times in lakes. Seem other than, you know, Sarah Thomas or Jamie Monaghan, always seem insanely large, like 22 hours in a lake. And yet I guess someone might do that, but then have the fear of the English Channel. Do you know what I mean? There's like, why? Because, you know, if you can swim for 22 hours in a lake, you're going to get across to France. Yet I think some people still have that worry of the romance of the ocean. I'm not really asking a question here. I'm just, it's a sort of a train of thought that you've just sort of, that you've picked. So yeah, that 22 hour swim, I mean, how was that? Was that quite a jump up from a sort of marathon that you'd done before? Did you suddenly decide, you know what, I'm going to do 22 miles? Or having done like, I don't know, 10 miles?
I had the prior year, I had connected two routes in Lake Tahoe, which amounted to, I think, 26 miles. And so it was a logical jump to do the 32. What was absurd was thinking that I could do 64, which was my goal, was to do 100 kilometers, was to do the round trip. But I had been, I was sick for most all of July, never tested positive for COVID, but was unreasonably sick. And all of my trying to get better, I never got better enough to really get back in my training. That was when I was going to do my long training swim where I tested my feed strategy and all those things that are really important leading up to a big swim. So going into the 32 mile swim in August, what I had told my crew and my coach and what I was planning for was like the 64 mile swim. I had only done one 5 hour swim, a 10 mile 5 hour swim leading up to this, what was going to be supposed to be 64 miles. And so I was like, is this possible? Like to have done one 5 hour swim and go and swim for what we were thinking would be what, 36 hours, well over a day of swimming, not more than that. My math's not right.
it's a long time. It's a really long time.
Yeah. But what I decided to do, because I'd overhauled my stroke, become more shoulder safe, and I felt very confident in my swimming ability. I was like, well, let's just see what I can do. And so when it told my crew, we're going for it. The pilot's ready for me to do a double, crew's ready for me to do a double. And it took, and everything started off fine. I was probably 5 hours from the turn when I decided in my mind, I was like, I don't know if I really want to turn around. I'm pretty good. I'll be good with 32 miles. 50K is good enough. And so I told my crew at some point, I was like, I'm just going to let them know that we're going with plan B. Like, plan A was the round trip. Plan B was you get out when you get to the other side. And they were awesome. They rallied. They were lifted my spirits back up. You know, plan A is the way you're doing this. And it became its own feat just to turn around, because in my mind, I'd already shifted to like, okay, I'm fine with 32 miles. And they talked me into turning around, and then I got to have that. So, you know, I talked to a lot of marathon swimmers, and everyone talks about like these really hard spots where you're crying and then you're laughing. And I didn't have much of that. The first 32 miles, I felt pretty great. But once I turned around, I started being like, oh my God, my son, you know, I told my kids I was going to go back where I started, and my failure of a mom, you know, I got to really like war with my emotions and get to these hard spots where my crew's like, just swim to the next feed, just swim to the next feed. And so I was like, literally just trying to get to the next feed. I hadn't had that feeling before in a swim. And so, it made me realize, oh my gosh, I really probably could do a lot more than I think that I can. And like, so if you're setting yourself up to, you know, swim to the other side, you were saying before, like, yeah, I could get to France, but then is that going to be enough for me? Part of my, like, should I go do the channel as well? If I was just going to be there already for like a month or something, sure. But the other part is like, am I really going to be satisfied if I only swim to France, or am I going to have to swim back? And then that's its own beast. Do I really want to do that? So that brings me back to like, where lakes are just a lot more of a sure thing in a way.
Yeah. I mean, is it for marathon swimmers, is it ever enough? Because marathon swimmers are always looking for the next mm-hmm. body, or the next body of water, the next adventure. And maybe life will get in the way, or, you know, life makes some things not possible. But it's that wonder, I think, that drives us and keeps us all close to the sport, and keeps us, I think, for the most part, keeps us humble, because you know, we don't know what's possible. You know, Sarah Thomas just decides one day that she's going to go and do a double North Channel tumble turns in Ireland, and, you know, heads back, you know, first person ever, you know what I mean? It's like these people are pushing these boundaries so far that what is possible. And, you know, I feel privileged to be part of a small part of a sport that seems to be growing exponentially. You know, who's going to be the first man to do a quadruple channel? Is that possible for a man? I don't know. Seems to me it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, what are your thoughts? This is a completely ad hoc question. Seems to me that female marathon swimmers are much, much better at staying awake for the most part. I mean, obviously there are exceptions to the rule, and they just seem to be much better at the really long stuff, certainly at the moment. And I've got no interest in anything like a double channel or anything like that. But for me, it's unfathomable to do what you did, 22 hours. How did you deal with the sleep deprivation? Again, that wasn't a question. It was just a stream of consciousness directed your way. So I apologize.
Okay. I feel like I'm really well trained for that, having two kids.
There it is.
I feel like I'm like 22 hours is not really an issue. I wanted to make it to 24, but it felt the chill that I was experiencing, and the more just like the not being able to get my stroke rate up, like 2 more hours seemed unfathomable. And we just happened to be near a state park where I was able to walk up on shore, and it felt like a more dignified finish than just getting on the boat. I don't know if it actually was, but it, whatever, it fueled me to get that, to get there. And then,
you had a beginning and an end then, didn't you?
Yes. I don't know if it becomes, it's not a repeatable route. I'm still working with MSF on getting it documented, but I don't think that last part counts. The turnaround to when I got out, but it felt, like I said, a dignified
finish. Well, surely it will. Like, if you know, it's chartered and you've got witnesses, do you know what I mean? It's like,
I think it was only like 4 miles though. It wasn't a marathon. So I'll work with them. I think it can be documented by WOWSA or something for that last 4 miles. But it wouldn't be, but I like was swimming down the middle of the lake and then I took this right there over to the beach. So if anyone's trying to beat my time, they won't have any trouble with that. They just swim straight. But anyway,
you were a pioneer. You were a pioneer of that route.
Like George Village to Ticonderoga to Rogers Rock State Park.
Such a long way. I mean, that's such a long way. And have you got any swim like that in the near horizon in your head?
I'm a little remiss about the fact that I don't, because I definitely feel like it's something I want to go push myself to do again. But I'm in the interest of staying in the good graces of my family. I've been rolling over Loch Ness since 2020. I was supposed to go to Scotland, and last year it didn't seem like it was a good idea. So we're going to go to Scotland this year, and that's what's currently on the horizon for me. This year's more about, again, the speed. So the speed comes into play. Wouldn't it be great if I could get across faster in cold water? And then the cold, you know, being comfortable at Loch Ness temperatures, even in August, is, you know, just being able to sustain myself. So I feel like those are good challenges for this year. Like I said, I'm a little remiss that I'm not trying to push myself further. But I feel like I can work on, the feed strategy, quick feed. There's tons of things I can work on in the context of my goals for this year.
That's amazing. Just for my listeners, how far is Loch Ness, and what's your anticipated temperatures?
I think it's either 20 or 21. And I believe the temperature is around 14.
Yeah, so 21 miles or 21 miles?
21 miles, yeah, sorry.
It's a long way.
The conversion here for Celsius.
No, 21 miles and, you know, 13, 14 degrees. I mean, that sounds about right for Scotland. I mean, that's plenty to think about, you know.
Right,
And you're right, I think you're being unfair of yourself to actually start thinking about, you know, too much other things, because that's a massive undertaking, and I'm sure you'll smash it based on your, you know, your history and what you've accomplished. Excuse my dog barking in the background. Open water swimming has always had a degree of fear factor for me. I know we mentioned this at the beginning slightly about the, you know, the fear of swimming in a pool in confined spaces when you're trying to swim fast, maybe. But I think that fear factor in the wonder of open water swimming, you know, is there for most people, which might be why it's so addictive, because there's a certain spirit that comes with that. Mm-hmm. Do you identify with that? And if so, is there a memory that comes to mind that you're willing to share?
I definitely am with you on the fear factor. I feel like it's there. I feel I'm in this, I guess, where I'm coming to in my life right now. I'm very much feeling like this journey of acceptance of I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be right now. And if I'm going to be taken by something, then I guess that's what's going to happen. So I'm trying to think of a story that support that. I'm not sure that I'm coming up with anything.
It doesn't have to be necessarily of like a physical story. It can be, you know, is there a memory of surmounting your fear, maybe on that first relay when your relay partner asked you to stay in. Mm-hmm. Now, was there a moment there where, you know, you were battling with some sort of fear of the water? I mean, you were swimming at night then, weren't you?
Yeah, it was. And I think maybe that's where some of my initial tactics of how to handle that fear came to be, is like that I can consume myself with the with a swim of what I'm doing and the swim and what I'm doing and what's going and what's what I'm perceiving around me outside the water. And it can take me away of some fear that would be of what's in the water. Like I'm just much, I became much more concerned about me and my continuing to swim, that I didn't succumb to the fear of like what lurks beneath, so to speak, which was very much what kind of felt like a barrier when I was getting going, was just, yeah, I would let those little things get to me.
It's amazing because you strike me as someone who's, you know, as I said, you jump in feet first, and you seem like someone who is very much a yes person, and worry about the details, you know, worry about the details later. Just get on with it. That's what you strike me as, someone, and it's quite infectious, that, which obviously as a coach is a wonderful sort of position to have, because it rubs off on everyone else. If I wanted to ask you this earlier, but we sort of got sidetracked. When I'm in the water on my own, that's when my fear starts to kick in. Whereas if I'm telling someone in the water with me to not be scared, that helps me be more rational. Mm-hmm. And weirdly, that doesn't happen, which is partly why I like being with other people in the water, because I can that shared experience becomes like the sort of you can help each other through it in a way. But do you identify with that as a coach as well?
Well, yeah, like I said, when I was working with those kids in the lake, that was very much how I think I got over a lot of my fears, was kid talking them through their fears helped me feel more comfortable just in that they're irrational to some to a lot of extent. I guess in lakes.
Well, we've all swam really fast in a pool because, you know, we think something's chasing us,
right?
You know, totally irrationally. Yeah, and it's that thing of convincing someone that they're safe weirdly convinces you that you're safe. You know, even when you might not be.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. And so if you could paint yourself the perfect swim, it doesn't necessarily have to be anywhere real. You could say, I'd like to swim again in the waters of Hawaii, but could it be the English Channel, please? Can you do that? You know, it comes from the question came from always remember the water wants you. And I always think, like, when I feel that, I imagine a swim. I mean, it's not, I'm not going to tell you what it is because it's not about me, but like, is there a swim that you kind of go to in your head?
That's interesting. Oh gosh, I just had a memory pop up and I don't know that this will ever materialize, but I had the good fortune to, it must've been 1998 or 99, that a friend, very good friend of mine, and I traveled to Thailand, and we took a boat to Koh Phi Phi, one of the islands, and we got off the boat and ended up getting insanely sunburned, but we just walked out, didn't realize the tide was carrying us out. And I remember looking up and seeing one of the other islands and being like, and the water was just this amazing, I still can see it in my head, this like dark turquoisey blue, but like the deepest blue turquoise that you could ever imagine. And that, you know, in the islands, just the way that they pop straight up out of the ocean into these beautiful spires. And I remember seeing this island away. This was way before my open water swimming journey or anything, but being like, I wonder if I could swim to that island. I don't have no idea how far away it was or which island it was. And then we ended up having to walk back because the tide had pulled us out so far. But anyway, maybe that would be the swim for me, would be going to Thailand and swimming around some of the islands down there. I know there's more other beautiful places, but that memory just popped up.
It sounds amazing. And going back with the marathon swim hat on.
Yeah, exactly. It would be a whole nother world.
Would be, wouldn't it? Well, that sounds
too close, right?
Yeah, that sounds pretty special. What a lovely answer. I've never been to Thailand, but I can picture it from, you know, pictures and movies. I mean, it would be a beautiful place to swim.
Communing with the fish. That's another thing I did to work on my fears. I remember a friend of mine had this lovely little lake house on this tiny little lake that had a ton of lake weed. But I remember, this was before having kids, so I had the time that I would just go out and float over this like lake weed and the and the you know, all the stuff that, you know, touches you and gives you the willies and all that. But I would just sit there and I would just kind of commune, and you sit and you just watch the fish and just like watch them in their element, and then you just kind of like let it absorb you. And be like, I'm just one of these little fish in the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing I did to try to help work on my fears.
Yeah.
I do get it. I mean, while I am a person who jumps in with both feet to a lot of things, I have in working on the ocean fears, I've tried to find events. I've done the swim around Coronado in California, which is just like 12 miles, but as a nice, you know, like you're close enough to land, getting a feel for the whole saltwater thing again. I know I did that Bermuda swim, but it feels like that was a fluke. There's a 24-hour relay event that Susie Dodds hosts in San Francisco. And so you're swimming every few hours with a team of people every few hours all night long. And so I've been trying to like dabble in the ocean thing and at night and it, you know, to try to work on those fears.
Yeah.
I guess I don't want fear to hold me back, obviously.
No, I don't think it will. I think you have too much of a spirit. So my last question, Shannon, where was your last swim and how was it?
My last swim or practice swim?
Either.
I am immensely fortunate. Again, I have, I feel my so gifted in so many ways in my life, but I have an endless pool in my backyard, and I'm able to go pop down and go swimming anytime that I can break away and make that happen, which isn't as often as it should be, or maybe it's exactly what it's supposed to be. But I've been working on, I can't do the performance anxiety thing, but I've been working on maintaining my form in the context and breathing more frequently. So enhancing my oxygen exchange, which of course gives you speed and energy and everything. When I've always breathed every three strokes or sometimes even more, thinking that I can maintain my form even better. But my little toy that I'm practicing with right now in my swimming is trying to maintain my form at speed. So my swims lately have been lovely because I have a focus. They're very deliberate. They're often 10 or 12 minutes long. That's about as long as I can go swim for, but they're very, very targeted and exactly what I need to be doing, I think, for my future goals. So
that's awesome. That's the dream.
Not having open it. Water, unfortunately. Well, I live in a place with very low reservoirs, horribly drought induced. We do go swim at a little 12 meter, not even tiny little puddle that we go wade into for just cold water acclimatization, but no good places to swim right now, unfortunately.
It's also the middle of winter, Shannon. So
and
I can say that knowing it's the middle of winter where you are. As well, so that I wouldn't expect you to have swum in the open water anywhere locally, necessarily, because that's proper cold. That's ice swimming cold, which is so far beyond my meager abilities in terms of cold water. That's what scares me most about open water swimming. Really, is the cold. That's what I'm most worried about in April next year is getting into cold water. Anyway. Shannon, thank you so much for that. It was a really wonderful chat, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share your open water journey. Because I think lots of people who have listened to your podcast maybe haven't heard your side of the story. So it was a really lovely chance. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. It was lovely.
Thank you for that chat, Shannon. It's so great to hear you speak about the sport we all love. I also want to apologize if in any way I undermined lake swimming compared to ocean swimming. Listening to that back, I think that may have come across, or maybe not, I don't know. That wasn't my intention, and of course, lake swimming doesn't have the added buoyancy of the salt water, and lakes can be just as vicious. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that chat, and I look forward to bringing you another episode next week. Happy swimming, one and all.